You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
How sweet it is. The Rockets are moving on. On that note, welcome in to Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the NBA's best basketball team to this point in the 2018 season. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. Again, it started off a little hairy for the Rockets in Wednesday night's Game 5, but just as it did in Game 4, it ended very, very sweet with the Rockets 122-104 winners in Game 5. This time even better because it closed out the first round series, Rockets winning it 4-1 in a gentleman's sweep. Perhaps most impressively of all three of the final Rockets wins in the series, Game 2, Game 4, and Game 5, none close, all wins by at least 18 points, 18, 19, and 20. So the Timberwolves, with Jimmy Butler back, there's a reason why they were on a 51-plus win pace with a healthy Jimmy Butler. They showed it at times this series, a very talented team. You could argue as talented or better than any team in the West besides the Rockets and Warriors, but even a team that was playing well and wanted it, it wasn't enough to beat the Rockets, who proved over five games why they won 65 games in this regular season. James Harden, 24-12 tonight, 8-21 from the field, particularly impressive because of his 24 points, 19 came after the intermission. He had just 5 points on 2-of-9 shooting in the first half, but flipped the switch in the second half, 19 points on 50% shooting. It's not how you start, it's how you finish in the playoffs. And again, I think for Harden in particular, given some of the adversity he's gone through in the past, some of the narratives that are out there, for Harden to be able to turn it around mid-game, that's especially valuable for him. The Rockets also up and down the roster. This was the closest thing to a team win the Rockets had. They had their best night collectively from three this series, 18-44, over 40%. Actually, exclude Chris Paul, who had a bad shooting night. Now, he still had 12 points, 9 assists, 5 rebounds, but he was 0-8 from behind the arc. Other than Chris, they were actually 18-36, so 50%. The Rockets up and down the roster, their best collective shooting night. Trevor Ariza, 16 points, 4 of 7 from 3. P.J. Tucker, 15 points, 5 of 7 from 3. So many daggers from the corners. Eric Gordon off the bench. We talked about his struggles the first three games. Well, he's had consecutive quality games. 19 points, 5 of 11 shooting, 3 of 7 from 3. So the role players got going through the first three games of this series. They were called out, all shooting below 30% from 3. Those three in particular, Ariza, Tucker, and Gordon. They've responded well, so it's great to see the Rockets not just on the back of the stars, but through a team performance, get a win. But yes, I'm saving the best for last, and that's Clint Capella, who had a ridiculous 26 points. Yes, that's a team high. And 15 rebounds, of course, also a team high, in 33 minutes on 12 of 14 shooting against Karl-Anthony Towns. And he, to me, is the player of the game. I would almost go as far as to say he's the player of the first round, and that's why he's going to be the focus of our initial segment here in our usual 3 points recap, breaking down Game 5, the 18-point win that gives the Rockets the first round series 4-1. Now, Karl-Anthony Towns did get better within this series. You give him credit for that. Tonight he had 23-14, 9 of 14 from the field, but on the series, Clint outshot him 61% to 41%. He out-rebounded him 14-13. He equaled his scoring output, had more than double the blocks. I said throughout this game, there were so many grown man rebounds from Clint Capella where it just looked like he was by far the most physical player on the court, which he was. Clint Capella went into tonight leading the NBA in rebounds in the playoffs at 14, and he actually increased that figure because he had 15 tonight in his 33 minutes. You wanted to play more minutes? That was your critique going into the year? Okay, he did that. You want him to shoot better? Well, I don't know if it's even possible to shoot better than 12 of 14 from the field. You want him to finish better around the rim? Certainly he showed you the toughness that maybe was not there against Steven Adams a year ago, even against Karl-Anthony Towns, who played 36 minutes, was very engaged, also had 4 assists. Like I said, you tip your hat to Karl-Anthony Towns, who got better throughout this series, but even a guy who's regarded as one of the most talented young players in the NBA was no match for Clint Capella, who, by the way, is still just 23 years old. It's incredible how much he continues to progress And what really stood out in this one was just how much the Rockets did in the defensive end of the floor. Now, Minnesota did get to 104 in terms of total points, but they put up 30 in the fourth quarter, which was garbage time. The Rockets had this clinched after three. When it really mattered after half, when the Rockets, and by the way, let's talk the first half too, when Chris Paul and James Harden had just seven combined points on like 20% shooting, the Rockets were within four. They hung around defensively early in the game. In the second quarter, especially when Capella was not in the game, the first 7 minutes or so, there was certainly a lapse. But the first quarter, they're only down one. And then the end of the second quarter, they got back in it. Minnesota was up 51-41 with, I believe, about 6 minutes left. And yet it was only a four-point game of the half. Rockets actually got within one at one point. And that's because the defense, Capella, you could see it starting to turn late in the first half. And then at the start of the second half, in the third quarter, Minnesota limited to just 15 points. Yes, James Harden turned it on. He started making his shots. The shooters made some timely threes. But ultimately, the Rockets won this game defensively. And the reason I want to highlight that, it's the second consecutive game in which the Rockets have been able to do that following a subpar defensive showing in Game 3. It's great to see. But the reason that it's especially thrilling for me is that it shows you why the Rockets are better than a year ago and even better than what we may have thought entering this season, maybe even entering the playoffs. Because the question has always been, when things get down to the nitty-gritty, when everyone is playing really hard, just how much of an edge does Clint Capella have? What is that nasty streak when things get really physical in the playoffs? Because we saw a season ago, and granted, he's young, so there's always a case that he can improve, but he didn't play well in the first round against Steven Adams. What's going to happen when you go up against another elite big and the games get more physical? I asked him about it myself before this series, and he said he learned a lot from that, that you're not going to get the calls you get in the regular season. It's more physical. You have to play through. Well, boy, did he show in this series that he learned his lesson. And that, to me, not just the series, but this season, that's why the Rockets have a championship ceiling. That's why no matter what happens with Steph Curry, I do think the Rockets have a legitimate chance against the Warriors. Certainly, they'll have home court advantage. But beyond that, can they match up? Yes, because Clint Capella is no longer a bit player. He's not a 24 minutes per game guy who you just pick and choose your matchups here and there, hope he's hot in a given night or making his free throws. No, he's a legitimate 30 plus minutes per game guy. His stamina is better, and more importantly, his defense is better. He is not just offensively a guy that's great in the pick and rolls and athletic, but he has transitioned from a solid defensive player to an anchor. He is actually a rim protector. In the third quarter, Minnesota, a team with so many athletes, Jimmy Butler, Jeff Teague, Andrew Wiggins, it felt like no one was able to get to the rim and get a good look, in part because Capella, he protects the rim. If there's a switch, he can even guard perimeter players from the three-point line. It is incredible what he can do, and then the rebounding, leading the NBA, just incredible effort, and even in the second half, it wasn't just the fact he was getting rebounds. He had a couple of tip rebounds, which he was diving on the floor. He played 33 minutes. And this is a guy who a year ago seemed capped at 25. It is incredible the growth of Clint Capella just in the past 12 months. And then to see him leading his team in scoring and rebounding in a closeout game against Karl-Anthony Towns, who, by the way, played pretty well. He improved this series. Tip your hat to them. It's a very talented Minnesota team. They're young. They'll probably improve themselves. They will be back. I have a feeling it's not the last Rockets-Timberwolves series and playoff series in the next few years. But Clint Capella, he's had a massive series outplaying Karl-Anthony Towns. And beyond just this series, just the matchup with Towns, I think it reflects why the Rockets are so different, because it's not just James Harden and Chris Paul. Historically, even teams with star guards like that, you wonder, okay, well, what's going to happen when you have a game in which they're cold from the perimeter? And from three especially, Harden and Paul tonight were combined just 4 of 19. Mentioned that's Paul in particular, who was 0 of 8. And what happens if the threes aren't falling? Well, what the Rockets showed you tonight, even in the first half when it seemed like they were sluggish, especially the two big guys, they stayed in there because they got just enough grit from guys like Capella, the rebounds. We know what Trevor Ariza, who played 38 minutes, PJ Tucker, who played 33, besides their shooting, you know the contributions they make defensively. Ryan Anderson off the bench made a three, but in his 10 minutes, he threw his body around. Eric Gordon was active, attacking the rim. The Rockets showed tonight, they're not just a finesse team. They can beat you with power as well. And I think that's what makes them so different than a year ago. And it starts with Clint Capela. He's not the only guy, but it starts with him. That's even a credit to Nene, who's been surprisingly good this series against Karl-Anthony Towns. Some folks wondered if he would play in the playoffs. Well, he's played pretty well thus far. We'll have to see what the second round series is as far as whether the matchup is favorable to him. But at this point, I don't know that you can be more pleased as far as the Rockets' long-term potential than what you've seen in the first round. Because it's not even necessarily just James Harden or Chris Paul or your superstars taking over. It's those variables that we've talked about all year long, especially Clint Capela, taking their game to another level, even when challenged by a good opponent. And that's why, to me, to see Clint Capela 26-15, leading his team in both categories in a closeout Game 5, all with Karl-Anthony Towns playing really hard. It's not like he just faded the way he did the first two games. That, to me, shows you why this Rockets team is so special and has potential, certainly not just to be the best team over 82 games, but the best team over four playoff series as well. Now, I want to lead by giving Clint his due, because to me, all season long, he is the biggest factor in your ceiling being raised. But up and down the roster, this was a team win. James Harden, 24-12. I know you come to expect it from him. 8 of 21 from the field, 4 of 11 from 3. It feels a little, I don't know if underwhelming is the right word, maybe ho-hum, because he's the MVP. But again, halftime, 5 points, 2 of 9 shooting. And you can say, yeah, he needs to be better in the first half. Honestly, he does need to be. But given his, I don't know if even playoff history is the right way to describe it, but we know the narratives that are out there. To start slow in that kind of setting, just like Game 4, and to be able to turn it around Game 5, that shows a lot of mental strength, that you're blocking out the noise, you're not looking at the box score, you're not feeling pressured, you're just going out there and doing what you've done all season long, which is the key for the Rockets, because over 82 games, it was proven they're the best team in the NBA. So just go out and do what you've been doing all season, and things are going to be fine. And so I think seeing multiple games in this series where Harden shook off a slow start in game, that's especially valuable. And of course, he did it not just outside the arc, but inside the arc as well. Took 10 shots that were not threes, which shows you he was willing to drive when necessary. And hey, for all the folks that throw out narratives about, oh, Harden just lives at the line. Well, guess what? Harden had 24 points in a playoff clincher, 12 assists, and they only went to the free throw line 4 times. The Rockets didn't really get their whistles in this game, just 19 as a team. Minnesota actually shot more free throws. So for all the talk, and it's all lazy, but we know it's out there, about, well, the Rockets just survive on these whistles. They didn't get them in Game 5. It didn't matter. That goes, well, it starts with Capela, but I'd say it's up and down the roster. It's a tougher team. They have more than one way to win, and I think that's what's different than what we were saying this time a year ago, when certainly the Rockets were a good team, having won 55 in the regular season, but you didn't feel like they had different ways, different guys that could win you a game. It had to be a certain formula, a certain way, if the Rockets were going to win. This year, it's different. Chris Paul could not find his touch at all from behind the arc. 0 of 8. Well, guess what? He was 6 of 8 from inside the arc. Also had 9 assists and 0 turnovers. James Harden, 12 assists to 3 turnovers. Between them, James Harden, Chris Paul, 21 assists to just 3 turnovers. Yeah, that's fabulous. That goes back to what we said in Game 4, that you want to control what you can control, which is the defense and the possessions. Sometimes the shots aren't going to fall, sometimes they are, but if you take care of your assignments, which the Rockets' defense did lag in the first half, I'll admit that, but in the final few minutes of the first half and generally all the second half when it was winning time, the defense was great, and then throughout the game, the turnovers were managed again. Rockets actually just had 4 turnovers as a team, which shows you they're not being careless, they're valuing the possessions, and if the defense is there, and especially if you're not turning the ball over, then ultimately the Rockets have enough playmakers, they have enough shooting, that over the balance of 48 minutes, it's going to go your way. And you could see it a lot in the first half when Minnesota shot like 55% from the field, nearly 70% from 3. Chris Paul and James Harden could seem to throw it in the ocean, and yet the Rockets were within 4 points. At some point over 48 minutes, that is going to turn. The key is just keep playing, and don't let your early struggles phase you. Mentioned it with James Harden. He's kept shooting the last two games and has turned it around. Give Chris Paul some credit as well. He couldn't throw it in the ocean from 3. He actually didn't even score until he had that one shot right before the halftime buzzer. Well, ended up with 12 points, 9 assists, and no turnovers. And again, inside the arc, 6 of 8. So bad nights are going to happen. to anybody. It's a hard sport, especially against playoff defenses. And if you're playing a team that is playing for its playoff lives, they're going to be extra feisty. Just look at Oklahoma City, who overcame a 25-point deficit in the second half to win going away. We'll talk about that in our third and final segment of the show. But for Chris and James in particular, fair or unfair, we know the nerves that are out there. So to see them play through the adversity, play through the noise, not going to say it was a banner night for those guys, but I liked what I saw from them mentally combined, if you want to add them up, and I believe in that, 36 points, 21 assists, and then most importantly, 21 assists to just 3 turnovers. That's what you want to see from your stars, your primary decision makers in a closeout setting. The Rockets took the game seriously, and ultimately over 48 minutes, they got enough shots to fall to where they eventually pulled away. But of course, as I said leading off, it wasn't just about James and Chris. This was the epitome of a team win. And that's because when things weren't going on, just as what happened in Game 4, you had enough shots from the role players to hang in there until eventually the stars got going later on. Trevor Ariza, 16 points, 4 of 7 from 3. PJ Tucker, 15, 5 of 7. Eric Gordon, 19 points, 3 of 7. Combined, those guys were 12 of 21 from behind the arc, well above 50%. And these are three guys who, through the first three games of this series, were well below 30% combined. So it's an incredible turnaround for those wondering about, well, what's going to happen in the playoffs? Well, I think this series is proof. As the sample size increases, these guys are not fazed by the moment. They've been under a lot of pressure all year. I think especially the race for the number one seed put them through some pretty hairy situations in which they had to perform. So no, I don't buy the idea that playoff pressure is getting to these guys. The key is just getting the sample size enough to where it's eventually going to even out, and that's what ultimately happened over the course of this series. Now, they did have to extend them a little bit tonight, but I think the Rockets knew that, assuming they get this one, which they did, they're not going to have to play until at least Sunday, and if Oklahoma City, Utah goes 7 games, they could well have close to a week off and not start until next Tuesday. Have to wait and see what happens Oklahoma City, Utah Friday night. If that closes, my bet is that the Rockets start on Sunday. If it goes Game 7, it probably doesn't start until Tuesday. So that's why Ariza at 38, Paul at 34, Harden at 38, PJ and Capella at 33, Gordon at 32. I think Mike D'Antoni knew he could ask a little bit more of his guys tonight, especially once things got in their favor in the second half, because, well, you're going to have a pretty long time off after this game. But in general, Trevor, PJ, and Eric, it's a similar theme to what we said about Chris and James, which is keep playing. The defensive contributions have always been there. And by the way, Mike D'Antoni said all season long about PJ and Trevor, they shoot better the bigger the games. Well, I thought that was fitting tonight. 9 of 14 from 3, and overall 10 of 19. So above 50% from 3, above 50% from the field. Trevor actually a team best plus 24 in his 38 minutes. Those two guys in their 30s, they are as tough as it comes, but they also rise to the moment. So just as we were saying, you're wanting clues to the Rockets, how they're going to respond when things are really pressure-packed because we hadn't had that many games that meant a lot down the stretch of the year. Well, the microscope is on the stars, but I think the role players, you saw something about them and their DNA as well. We'll call it hashtag winning DNA. That's a shout-out to my good friend Pat Star, a.k.a. At PatDStat on Twitter. I'm sure a lot of you guys on Houston Twitter know his story, and fortunately he seems to be coming back from his illness. Wish him all the best, of course. Well, not in illness, but his injuries after everything that happened in game. If you want more on that, just go to PatDStat on Twitter. But the point is, winning DNA for the Rockets, it's not just the stars, it's the role players as well. Trevor, PJ, Eric. I liked what I saw even from Ryan in his 10 minutes, because he hit a 3, he hit 2 shots, also had 3 rebounds in there. He was throwing his body around. Again, a night in which the Rockets started off very slow, especially from the 2 stars. They were never out of it. And then it felt like in the second half, there was never that 50-point quarter. And perhaps it's even better, because the 50-point quarter is probably unsustainable. In this game, it was never like, oh my God, here's this run in which the Rockets put up 12 points in a minute and just look unreal. No, it was just a slow and steady. The Rockets are the better basketball team. Of course, James Harden and Chris Paul, but up and down the roster, tried and true. Veterans who know what they're doing, who are confident. They've got the guards, the star power, but also the defense, the toughness, the rim protection. Pick your attribute. The Rockets showed it tonight, especially in the second half when they turned a 4-point deficit into an 18-point win, winning by 20-plus again in the second frame. And to me, it's even more fulfilling than if Chris and James had just gone off and had a great game. Because, yeah, we know they're great, but what makes the Rockets special, and yes, you do want to see a little bit extra from those guys in the playoffs, but what makes the Rockets special and what you're going to need to compete against Golden State is not just a couple of stars, but a team, contributions up and down the lineup. And to me, that's what you had tonight. Your key role players, we mentioned Capella in the first segment, but Trevor, PJ, Eric, even Ryan and Anae with 10 minutes each, all of those guys played key stretches, and we'll have to see exactly what the rotation is in the second round as far as, is it Anae at backup center? Is it Ryan? Do you maybe need more than 9 minutes from Gerald Green? And the good news, the Rockets, depending on the night, they have flexibility. Remember in game two, when it was Gerald Green night, when he was playing virtually 30 minutes a game and going off. So there are different options the Rockets can turn to. They can mix and match based on lineups. But I think throughout this series, it wasn't just the Chris Paul and James Harden show. It was that the Rockets up and down the roster are a better, deeper, more tougher team. And the Timberwolves, they're pretty top-heavy. I mentioned Karl-Anthony Towns' stat line earlier, but Jeff Teague, Jimmy Butler, Andrew Wiggins, they all had their moments throughout this series. Now, they did not tonight. By the way, Butler scoring just 8 points in a closeout game. Kudos to the Rockets all over the court for good defense on him. Mentioned Ariza and Tucker, but you can't forget about what James Harden does in the defensive end. A couple of steals, a couple of blocks. Again, he has been very underrated on that end. And, of course, on the post, we mentioned Capella being able to switch onto guards. Well, many times you end up with Harden on Karl-Anthony Towns, and Harden, surprisingly, maybe not surprisingly by this point, because we've seen it so often this year, is able to hold his own because he is so damn strong in the low block and so tough. So it's up and down the roster. You know the defensive stalwarts. And by the way, the Rockets are showing you this level of defensive performance, and Luke Babute isn't even out there. I'm talking about all the defense, the toughness, the depth. And yeah, Luke Babute is probably going to be back, if not by the start of the second round, certainly by the middle part of it. So a Rockets team that is already showing you so much up and down the roster, it's about to get even better. And it wasn't always a pretty game. I think the Rockets in the second round certainly need to be more consistent in terms of their effort from the start of games, although some of this tonight was just sheer randomness and Chris and James not being able to throw the ball in the ocean. But by and large, if you beat Minnesota 4-1, a very talented team that, again, was on pace to win 51-plus games, if not for an injury to Jimmy Butler, and certainly appeared game after beating you by 16 in Game 3 and coming close in Game 1, to beat them the final three games by 18, 19, 20 points. Yeah, overall, when you consider what happens over the balance 48 minutes, and that's how basketball games are decided, it's hard not to feel pretty encouraged about what the Rockets have shown you up and down the roster, especially when you consider the looming return of Luke Bamute, which will give you even more depth, more defense, and more flexibility, especially because if there was one weakness for the Rockets in this series that was most pronounced, it was inability at times to stop dribble penetration. Well, guess what? Luke Bamute was out. He's your best quick defender on the perimeter, and, well, he's about to get back. So as good as the Rockets have looked thus far, they could be even better next round. And that leads me into the final segment, which is, well, who are they going to play in the next round? It could be either Utah or Oklahoma City. That's kind of stunning because 2 hours ago, I thought for sure we'd be talking about how Houston matches up with Utah. Utah up 3-1 and had a 25-point lead in the second half of Game 5 at Oklahoma City. And somehow the Thunder flipped the switch, as we have seen from times this year, led by Russell Westbrook, Paul George, Steven Adams. There's a lot of elite talent, and while it doesn't seem to be consistent, there are games we've seen them even make the Warriors look unable to match them, and that's why they're scary. And ultimately, that's why I think I would still prefer to play Utah. Now, I do think Utah going home for Game 6 is the favorite. There's a reason why they won both games convincingly in Utah. There's a reason why they got out to a 25-point lead tonight after barely more than a half. And I think maybe when the Thunder punched back, it caught them by surprise. And also, it's a young team that's not really that experienced in that type of environment. I think maybe they'll be better served to handle it in their own gym. And also, even against a Game 7, it's worth noting, they did win a Game 7 on the road at Chris Paul's LA Clippers last year. So it's not like they're totally inexperienced. I know that was Gordon Hayward, but a lot of the supporting cast was there. And some of the new guys, I know Donovan Mitchell as a rookie is new. Jay Crowder certainly is not. They've played in some big games. So you're not going to count them out. And up 3-2, I definitely think they're still the favorites going back to Utah, where they won the last few games convincingly. That said, there's going to be some emotional scarring from this, to have a 25-point lead in the second half of a closeout game, and not only to lose it without even being close. I know the experience I mentioned last year, but after having a 25-point lead in the second half and not being able to close it out, I don't know that you can be that confident about a Game 7 in Oklahoma City if you're Utah, which means the pressure is going to be on them, squarely on the Jazz, to close it out in Game 6. Now, I think they still should. They were the better team down the stretch of the year. They've been the better team on the balance of five games in this series. But ultimately, Oklahoma City is one game away from, in my opinion, being the favorite. Now, the good news, as far as the Rockets are concerned, it's going to go six or seven games either way. So they should be expending a lot more energy. It's a very competitive series, much more so than the Rockets and Wolves, a gentleman's sweep in five games. Rockets winning the last three, their wins, that is, by 18, 19, and 20 points. But the only nitpick you can find with the Rockets is that they didn't really have to execute that much in a close situation. Although, well, I guess they did in game one. They won that one by just three, and in large part because Harden was magnificent in the fourth quarter. So I guess I was thinking out loud because there haven't been that many close games lately, but there was one in this series, despite the last three being 15, the last four being 15-plus point margins. The Rockets did have a close win, and they won that. So I guess that's not even really a hole. It just feels like it because the last four have had such big margins. So ultimately, the Rockets are the better team over the season. They're going to be more rested, and it bodes well. They should be favored no matter if they play Oklahoma City or Utah. That said, my opinion is that they're better off playing Utah, and I don't think one extra game, i.e. it ends in seven instead of ends in six, is really that important in the grand scheme. That's why I hope Utah wins on Friday night, because my sense, when the chips are down, and I know I use that expression a lot, but I don't trust Utah to generate the offense. Utah had a 71-46 lead with, I believe, like 8 minutes left in the third quarter. Or actually, I think it was like 9 minutes left. They didn't even score 100 points for the game. Sure, Westbrook, Paul George, they did their thing offensively. But what stood out was how limited the Jazz were when things really got slow in the half court late in games, when the defense really got ratcheted up by a desperate team. That's why I think the Rockets winning convincingly tonight against a Minnesota team that was against elimination was so encouraging. When teams are desperate, these are very good teams. They play hard. Utah, their ball movement, their coaching, all of that stuff is great. But when things get really difficult, you have to have guys that go out there and make plays in one-on-one settings, like we've seen James Harden and Chris Paul do time and time again this season. You can even throw Eric Gordon in there as well. The only guy I really trust to do that for Utah is Donovan Mitchell, and he's a rookie. As great as he is, there are going to be moments where that inexperience shines through, especially if you put him up against the same positions, James Harden and Chris Paul, in the backcourt. Oklahoma City, Russell Westbrook, Paul George, Steven Adams, they are more top-heavy. There's more elite talent. Do I think they're going to put it together for four games out of seven? No, but I think it's not the craziest thing in the world, especially if maybe they gain a ton of confidence coming back from 3-1 against the Jazz. I wouldn't expect them to beat the Rockets. They shouldn't beat the Rockets, but there's a level of upside there. And who knows, sometimes in a series, you can become, based on emotions, more than what you've been over the season. I know Oklahoma City has not shown it on any sort of consistent basis so far, but to me, there's a level of upside there we have seen throughout this season that you can play your best game, even a team like the Rockets, and it might not be enough. That's how good Oklahoma City can be. Over seven games, I don't think it should happen, but I would rather not even go to that level of opponent. I would rather play a Utah team that, while, again, it's a great story, after the loss of Gordon Hayward, it's a small market, it's amazing coaching. I've seen some tweets about them becoming the new age Spurs based on the coaching, the culture, all that kind of stuff. I agree with it, but offensively, I just don't see the upside, especially not with Mitchell as a rookie, to scare me to beat me four times out of seven. And ultimately, I think they should still beat Oklahoma City. They've by and large been the better team over five games. They're going back to Utah, where neither game was even close in game three or game four, and the fans are going to be Rockets. It's a great opportunity for them, and as a Rockets guy, I hope they're able to take advantage of it. Again, the Rockets should be favored over either. I'm not afraid of Oklahoma City, but in terms of picking the matchup, I would lean in favor of the Jazz just because I don't see the offensive upside. I think the Rockets could grind them out, and I think if there's something we've seen from the Rockets in this series and on the stretch of the year, the Rockets are comfortable playing slow. If they need to grind it out in the half court, they can do that. And depending on the way the series goes, They can throw Ryan Anderson at the five if they want to space Rudy Gobert out. They can throw both Capella and Nene if they feel they need to bang. They've got a lot of versatility up front to match the size. And then on the perimeter, there's just a lot more proven scorers. And ultimately, Utah, it's a fine team. I don't see the upside. Now, I'm sure some could argue that, well, they're kind of like the Spurs who knocked out the Rockets a season ago in the second round. Maybe. But, well, first off, those Spurs for the first five games did have Kawhi Leonard, which the Jazz don't have a player to that level. But beyond that, the 2018 Rockets are not the 2017 Rockets. And if there's something you should have taken out of this five-game series against Minnesota, it's that. Yeah, the Rockets won the first round in five games a year ago against Oklahoma City, and it felt like they were hanging on in a lot of those games. It wasn't like that in this one. It's a good Minnesota team, got a lot of talent, and the Rockets, they won the last three games, 18, 19, 20 points. They shut the door. They did it defensively. They did it with James Harden and Chris Paul. They did it with Clint Capella outplaying Karl-Anthony Towns in the middle. They did it with contributions up and down the roster with the team shooting above 40% from three, the best that it's been all series in the last couple of games, and especially the final game. The effort wasn't pretty, but in the early going, but by and large, you're not going to play perfect games in the playoffs. Other teams are motivated. It's going to be difficult in terms of the entirety of the five-game series, the results from Game 5. I'm happy with where the Rockets are at. I think they're in a good place, and now, fortunately, they get at least 3 days off, and perhaps more than that, depending on what happens in Utah and Oklahoma City on Friday night. Series could start as early as Sunday, as late as Tuesday, but as I said, ultimately, I don't think one extra game for Utah, Oklahoma City is really worth that much in the grand scheme. To me, you'd cheer for who you think the Rockets match up better with, and to me, that's the Utah Jazz. I feel a little bit better about that matchup, although I do think the Rockets are deservedly favorites over either, and given what we've seen of the Rockets to this point, it's not excusable to lose to either team. The Rockets should go on to the Western Conference Finals, and at that point, you wait on, well, probably the Warriors, but you hope that Anthony Davis and the Pelicans might be able to show you something special in the second round. We'll just have to wait and see. That second round series getting underway on Saturday at Oracle Arena. So for now, I'm not signing off until the weekend games. I will do something over the next two games. We'll try and line up an interview show. But as far as our post-game coverage, we'll sign off for a few days. As always, thanks again for tuning in. You want more content from me or the show, the best place to get it in real time is on Twitter. I'm at Ben Dubose. The show is at Locked On Rockets. Also, don't forget Facebook page. That's facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, a website, LockedOnRockets.com, and an email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. Questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries. We've got a big audience these days with the Rockets playing so well and in the playoffs, really for the foreseeable future-ish. One series down and could easily be three to go here in Houston. It's going to be a great run, so if you want to get in on the action as far as promoting your business, or you just want to know more about the team, don't hesitate to reach out again. Email, Facebook, Twitter, all great ways you can get in contact with me, your host, Ben Dubose, and just let me know what we can do better for you, because we know we're the only daily podcast covering the Rockets, so we want to be there for you as well as we can. Also, don't forget about all our other great shows across the Lockdown Podcast Network. Well, I guess Locked On Timberwolves will have a post-game and post-season show, but lots of other teams in the playoffs, including the Thunder and the Jazz, potential next opponents. They've got great hosts, Eric G. and David Locke, so we're going to hear from them. Check out Locked On Thunder, check out Locked On Jazz, and of course, shows all over the NBA and the NFL. If you're a fan here in Houston, we've got Locked On Texans covered by my buddies Robert Land and Brian Patterson. Texans are going to have their draft over the next few days, so you want to hear about what they're doing, what they should do. Check out Locked On Texans because, well, if you want content in the absence of the Rockets for a few days, since they're able to rest up before the second round, as we discussed, Texans are going to be drafting. So, yeah, why don't you give Locked On Texans a try, because Robert and Brian, they're going to have some great content for you there as well. So with those plugs out of the way, I will sign off. Once again, the happy final in Game 5, Rockets 122, Timberwolves 104. Rockets clinch the best of seven series, 4-1. They now await their second round opponent, the winner of the Oklahoma City-Utah series, and Utah currently leading that 3-2. As always, thanks to y'all for listening. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, and I appreciate you guys so much for continuing to tune in here at Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball.